joined in. It seemed safest to do what everyone else was doing. He wondered how many in the audience believed the story and how many were just going along to get along. Touchette shook hands with the bishop who'd introduced him. The bishop patted his back and said something in his ear. Touchette returned to the microphone.
Before you leave, I have a couple of announcements. The triumvirate have changed your quotas, or reckonings, I mean. They'll be discussed individually with you by your local commissary officials.
The audience knew better than to groan at the news, but they did quiet down and stop filing out of the aisles.
Now, on the good news side, there's an exciting announcement from the new Universal Church and the Madison Triumvirate. Any couple that produces 10 or more children in their lifetime automatically wins the brass ring.
Valentine and Molly Carlson exchanged a significant look, and she tweaked up the corner of her mouth at him.
The new order recognizes the importance of motherhood and family life, and wants to get the northern part of the state repopulated. Any children already born to the family count. So you big families with 5 or 6 children already are well on your way to the brass ring.
Some of the bigger families applauded.
And finally, we've had some problems with insurgents and spies recently. The standard reward of a 2-year bond has been up to a 10-year bond in exchange for information leading to the capture of any undocumented trespassers in the triumvirate's lands. Thank you for your cooperation.
Thank you for your cooperation. Now go home and start making babies. God knows what you're going to feed them since they're upping the reckoning.
Now, Molly.
The tent was emptying fast, save for a few people with questions for either the bishop or Touchette. Valentine escorted Molly to the exit, following her parents, and paused to look back at the podium. Touchette was looking at him and speaking to the bishop. The wolf smelled trouble at that look. He hurried out of the tent, racking his brain as he tried to remember if he'd ever seen the Illinoisan's face before. What was there about him that would draw the golden touch? Back at the wagon and buggy, the Carlsons ate a quick dinner out of their baskets. Flanagan joined them, helping himself to a choice meat pie.
He left a few things out, you know, Gwen. In his lecture to the patrol, he elaborated a bit about how he got out of the jam after he was caught helping those folks hide animals from the commissary. While he was sitting in the depot, they offered him his life back if he would turn in each and every farmer who withheld so much as an egg or a stick of butter from the commissary. Turned out he had a real good memory. It was all part of the talk he gave on duty this morning. Oh, and the brass ring he threw out into the audience as a phony. But don't tell anyone I told you. Don't hurt nothing to have those folks believing they got it made, as long as they stay in our good graces.
Duty, Mike? I bet you could tell Mr. Midas there a thing or two about devotion to duty, like putting it before family. You're an expert at that.
Don't start, Gwen. That's in the past. I've done plenty for you since, even a few things that would get me on the next train to Chicago. Oh, shit, it's starting to rain again. Bye, kids. Stay out of trouble. Glad to see you showed up for the meeting, St. Croix. Maybe you're smarter than you look.
On the ride back, Molly drove the buggy. Valentine was unsure of himself on the rain-wet surface, and they decided a pair of experienced hands on the reins would be best. Valentine and Molly sat together under the tarp again, but he couldn't recapture the half-excited, half-scared mood of the trip down when he first felt her close to him.
You didn't fall for any of that baloney, did you?
No, but he did know how to tell a good story. He had me spellbound for a while.
Yeah, he's one of the best I can remember hearing. That's what you'd expect right before they increase the reckoning. You seem a million miles away.
I didn't like the way he looked at me. At the end, when he was talking to the bishop, almost like he was asking about me. Funny, because I've never seen him before in my life.
Well, according to Uncle Mike, he really is from Illinois. You ever been there?
I passed through it on the way here, but we stayed in the uninhabited part. Or mostly uninhabited, that is. Sorry if I seem preoccupied. You sure pegged the baby thing. How'd you know?
Just because I'm 18 and hardly been more than 20 miles from home, you think I'm ignorant. There's a fresh batch of vampires up in New Glarus. Nobody knows when they came in with their master exactly, but it seems like they're here to stay. That's more hungry mouths. How often do they need feeding anyway?
Well, that's one of the many things we don't know about the Reapers. According to the theories out of this group that studies them down in Arkansas, How much they need to eat depends on how active they and their master are. We think a lot of times the Kurians have about half their hoods shut down. This is just guesswork, but the fewer reapers a Kurian has to control, the better he can control them. Sometimes when he's trying to work all 13 at once, they just turn into eating machines and do stupid stuff like forgetting to get in out of the daylight. But the Kurian can't control too few either. He takes a risk when he does that. If the link for feeding vital auras to the Kurian Lord gets shut down, like, say, if he's got only one Reaper left and it gets killed, we think the Kurian dies with it.
Molly rewrapped the thick reins in her hand.
That's interesting. It's funny to just be able to talk about them with somebody. Discussing the Kurians is a taboo subject here. Too easy to say the wrong thing. So, a Reaper can be killed?
Yes. But you need to put that at the top of your easier said than done list. I've seen 6 trained men pump rifle bullets into one at a range of about 10 feet, and all it did was slow it down. Of course, those robes they wear protect them a lot. If they're hurt, you can behead them. A lot of times we're satisfied just to blow them up or cripple them so they can't move around much and they're easier to finish off. But again, even catching one where you can gang up on it is hard. They're usually active only at night, and they see better than us, hear better than us, and so on.
So how do you do it?
It's a long story. Kind of hard to believe, too, unless it's happened to you. Now, I know I've told you there are also people like the Kurians, but they're on our side.
Yes, the Lifeweavers.
Good, yes, you have it. Long time ago, I think we worshipped them and made them out to be gods. But they have the ability to awaken latent, I don't know, I guess you'd call them powers. Within a human. About 4,000 years ago, they made it very totemistic so that people would accept what these gods or wizards or whatever were doing. The spirit of a wolf is in you.
Can they do it with anyone?
I don't know. The Lifeweavers select you for it. I know that much. Down in the Ozark Free Territory, they have 3 kinds of warriors they create, each named for an animal. And maybe they use different animals elsewhere, like lions in Africa, maybe. We're called the Hunters. We all carry a blade of some kind to finish off the Reapers. In the Wolves, we just use a short, broad-bladed knife. It's a very handy tool in the woods, too. The Wolves are like the cavalry. We move fast from place to place, scout out the enemy troops, and fight guerrilla actions, mostly. There's lots of Wolves. Those Cats are spies, assassins, and saboteurs. I don't know about the Cat training. Seems like they're just really, really good Wolves who prefer to work alone. I've only known one Cat. They go into the Kurian areas and mess with the Reapers. Maybe there's one around here somewhere. But if there is, he or she probably doesn't know I'm around. As I told you, I was just running the mail up to Lake Michigan. Well, then there are the Bears. They're the meanest bunch of badasses in the Southern Command, I can say for certain. I don't know what the Lifeweavers do to the Bears to make them the way they are, but I've heard of a single Bear taking on 3 Reapers and killing them all. They're like human tanks. We Wolves always make room for them at the bar when they come in.
The rain was ending. They listened to the clip-clop of hoofbeats. Luckily, it was an asphalt road with only a few gravel stretches. The Morgan trotted steadily behind at the end of his lead, enjoying his exercise. Molly slowed the buggy to a walk and let the horse breathe to give the rest of the family a chance to catch up a little in the plodding wagon.
Do you win often? I mean, actually go out and beat the Reapers?
Sometimes. The Ozarks are still free, aren't they? But it costs people. Good people.
Don't think about that too much. It makes you look old and tired. You're what, 20?
I feel older. Maybe it's all the miles.
Now it was Molly's turn to be lost in thought.
You beat them. We've always been told you just hide out up in the mountains, starving to death in the winter, stuff like that. Even the lodges, our organization for getting people out of the Triumvirate's reach, discourage anyone from going down there.
It's a long trip. Long and dangerous.
You must really trust us, David. I could turn you in and get a brass ring for sure. A wolf. An officer, even. They'd love that. Uncle Mike would shit himself to death if he knew. He even gave you a work card.
At first, I didn't have much of a choice except to trust you. It seemed like we were going to get caught anyway. Gonzalez wanted me to leave him, but I couldn't do that. Now I'm glad I gambled.
She cocked her head and smiled.
Why?
Valentine shook his head and averted his eyes. That smile was irresistible.
Father Max used to say, Women and six-year-olds never run out of questions.
Only because men and four-year-olds never have the right answers.
Listen to you.
Come on, I mean it, David. Why are you glad? Do you like this little charade we're playing, the courtship thing?
At the word charade, Valentine felt a glass splinter pierce his heart.
It's been fun, sure. I've enjoyed talking to you, being around your family. I haven't had a family since I was little.
Molly started the horse again at a slow walk.
I've had fun too, David. Sometimes I can't tell if it's a role that I'm playing or not. I'm almost sorry it has to end. Not that I want to bring a baseball team of your kids into the world to win a brass ring, of course.
Of course.
Back at the Carlson's home that night, Valentine and Gonzalez talked in the basement. Valentine told him about the pep talk that took place at the tent and the funny look he received from the speaker.
I don't know, Val. All the more reason to get out of town soon. You don't think it's going to look suspicious if we just disappear?
No, I already talked about that with Mr. Carlson. He's going to say Molly and I didn't get along and we took off for parts unknown after a big argument. How's that arm? Can you ride yet?
Gonzalez removed it from the sling. His fingers were curved, and the skin looked dry and unhealthy, like an octogenarian's arthritic hand.
He's bad, Lieutenant. I think the nerve is gone. It kind of burns and itches sometimes. I can still ride, but it'll be one-handed.
You can't shoot one-handed. Looks like you're heading for a well-deserved retirement.
I'll use that pistol.
And that's for Captain LaHave to say. Speaking of which, I haven't had a good dressing down in weeks. I'm ready to go home and get yelled at again. How about you?
Say the word.
I want to wait another day or two. You still look kind of pale, Senor Gonzalez. I want to cook us some biscuits and see to the horse's shoes. Anyway, how was your day holding the fort with Frat?
He's a tough kid. We could use him in the wolves.
Valentine was intrigued. He could not remember the last time Gonzalez had called anyone tough.
What do you mean?
Well, we got to talking while you were away. I told him where I come from, and he told me about Chicago. When he was little, he got put in the worst part of town with his mom and dad. In the center of the city, inside the river, there is this place called a loop. It's got a river to the north and west, and a lake to the east. A bunch of those frog grogs live in the shallows in the lake, you know? Then to the south, there is a big wall made out of an old expressway. According to Frat, trains still run people in, but no one can come out. The buildings are so tall, it's like being at the bottom of a canyon. No lights. The people there live on rats and birds, garbage that gets dumped in the river. He said they eat each other, too.
You sure he wasn't just making it up?
If he is, he's good at it. The only people that go in are the Reapers. All the bridges are down, but they use a tunnel system under the city to get in and out. That old loop area is like a happy hunting ground for the Chicago Reapers. They just leave their bodies for the rats, or those frog grogs. That's how the kid got out, through the tunnels. Can you believe it? Crawling in the dark through the tunnel the hoods use? I couldn't do it, that's for sure.
Valentine shuddered at the thought. A pitch-black tunnel? Reapers maybe at either end? Of course, maybe the kid's bravado came from ignorance of how easily the Reapers could spot him. Engine sounds from outside the house penetrated their refuge. Valentine's heightened hearing detected a vehicle slowing as it approached.
Hey, sir.
Shh, I hear it too.
Valentine identified a car engine with a bad muffler. It pulled into the Carlson's yard. Valentine gestured toward the hidden room. Gonzalez kept watch at the stairs, and Valentine worked the pine knot that allowed him to pull open the door. The secret room was a little more spacious with their cots out in Frat's part of the basement. Their packs and weapons were still concealed within. The ventilation duct let him hear the voices in the living room loud and clear. Mr. and Mrs. Carlson received Major Flanagan and his assistant Virgil in the main room. Even the squeaks of the old chairs could be heard through the air vent.
What brings you out tonight, Major?
It can't be a second helping of meat pie. I'm all out, and with the rain, there's no rabbits in the trap today. I can roast you a potato, if you want.
It's a social call, Alan. Well, 50-50. It's about the meeting at the tent today.
What, did we miss an encore? Pull himself up by his bootstraps so hard he flew out of the tent?
Gwen, your sense of humor needs a good curb bit. But it does have to do with Jim Touchette. He saw someone in your family who really intrigued him. Wants a personal interview, you might say.
Valentine reached for his rifle. It felt comforting in his hand.
Who, St. Croix? I'm not sure he's even going to be in the family yet, Mike. No, Alan. It was Molly. He wants your daughter.
There was a silent pause in the room above. After a full 10 seconds, Mr. Carlson's voice echoed forcefully down the vent.
Fuck you, Mike.
Valentine smiled with approval. He had never heard Mr. Carlson say anything stronger than heck before, but the occasion deserved it.
Are you gonna take...
Fuck you too, Virgil.
Now just wait it.
Okay. Before we get into a pissing contest, which you lose, and you know it, Alan, just think this deal through. Listen to what I have to say. Not only would you be doing me a big favor, and I think you owe me one after all these years, but you'd be helping your family, too. They're offering the whole family a 2-year bond. Actually, it's a 5-year bond. They said I could go up to 5 if I had to. Don't look at me that way, Virgil. She's my niece, and they ought to get everything they can out of it. Alan, I'll be honest with you. The next 5 years are gonna be tough. You know there are new Reapers in Glarus. I've already got orders to make lists of who is going to make the cut and who isn't. Your farm is doing good now, but what if you have a bad year? What if the cows catch something? You'd be damn glad you had that bond if something like that happens. And even if you're not on the list, maybe a vampire's passing through and happens to get hungry by your place. You know it happens as well as I do. The lists don't mean shit when they're prowling, but bonds do.
After a moment to let the threats, spoken and unspoken, sink in, the Major continued.
It ain't like she'd be gone permanent. I have that from the Bishop himself. Touchette is giving talks in Platteville, Richland Center, and Reedsburg, then going back through Madison. 3 weeks she'd be gone. He said he wanted some companionship on the trip, and the bond starts as soon as she shows up at the church center in Monroe. So she'll be safe in Madison, even. What can I say, Alan? You got a real honey of a daughter. She caught his eye.
Quite a time for this to happen. I wonder how St. Croix would like her disappearing with that old lech. So much for them settling down.
Don't worry about him. Worry about your family, Alan. St. Croix might understand, after all. I'll have a word with the bishop. Since St. Croix is practically family, maybe we can offer him the bond, too. Even make getting married to her a condition. That might close the deal. If he's a smart kid, he'll know 5 years is just what he needs when he's trying to get a farm up and running.
He's a smart kid, all right. Smart enough to blow your ass off through the floor.
Let's talk to Molly tomorrow.
Mrs. Carlson was obviously talking to her husband.
And maybe David, too.
Valentine counted 20 heartbeats.
Okay, Gwen. And listen, Mike, I'm sorry I got riled. You too, Virgil. I was just a little surprised, is all. When you're your father, your little girl's always 6 years old. She's a grown woman. I forget sometimes. But why her? There were prettier girls at the meeting.
Not according to Touchette. Virgil, go wait outside. Alan, if you don't mind, I'd like a private word with Gwen.
Okay, Major. I'll sleep on it. Call you tomorrow. Good night.
Night, Alan.
Valentine listened to the footsteps move about as Virgil was escorted to the door and Mr. Carlson retired to the kitchen. Valentine thought he heard him exchange a few words with Frat.
Now listen, Gwen.
Flanagan was keeping his voice low enough for it not to travel out of the room.
Not quiet enough for my ears.
You know I'm not the law. The law is whatever the triumvirate says it is. This Touchette is a big wheel in Illinois, one of the biggest outside of Chicago. The new church wants him happy, and I'm going to see that he's happy. I'm making it look like Alan has a choice in this, but he doesn't. Neither does Molly. You follow me?
I follow you.
Valentine picked up the anger in her brittle voice. He wondered if her brother did.
Touchette's gonna have her one way or another. I know what you have to say cuts a lot of ice with Alan, so you might as well profit from it and get that bond.
Is there a bond in it for you too, Michael?
Can't fool you, can I, sis? Maybe there is. This is pretty important. I think the Couriers want Touchette to consider moving here permanently. That is, if we can pry him away from the Illinois 11. They want him running the Wisconsin farms like he does in Illinois.
We, Michael? Are you a we with the Couriers?
Always have been. I know which side of the bread my butter is on. I always figured I got mom's brains. I think all you got was dad's stubbornness.
Okay, Michael. You're right. I'll see what I can do.
There. That wasn't so hard now, was it?
Harder than you'll ever know.
Wow, man, you're losing it.
Pratt shook his head and eyed the mountain of cordwood. Valentine was turning logs into firewood with his usual vigor. He stood outside one of the many little buildings budding from the barn's walls, filling the woodshed with fuel. During his stay with the Carlsons, Valentine had chopped a little every day to keep himself exercised. He did not use an axe. He preferred a saw to reduce the trunks into manageable 2-foot lengths, which he could then split with a wedge. He followed his routine with robotic precision. He grabbed a length of trunk and placed it on his chopping block, an old stump that had no doubt served in this capacity for years. Then he picked up the wedge in his left hand and the 20-pound sledgehammer in his right, gripping the latter right up under the rounded steel head. A vigorous tap seated the triangular metal spike. Then he'd step back, shift his grip on the sledge by letting gravity pull the handle through his calloused fingers, and whirl it in a sweeping circle behind him. He would then stack the halves and quarters in a nice tight pile. The day's woodcutting began after a half-hearted appreciation of one of Mrs. Carlson's epic breakfasts. Everyone ate with a preoccupied detachment, as if the family dog had gone rabid and no one wanted to talk about who would have to shoot it. Molly looked drawn, her mother pale and tight-mouthed, and Mr. Carlson sported a dark crescent under each eye. Frat gobbled his breakfast like a starving wolf and fled to the backyard and his chores, taking the dog with him. Even young Mary seemed to pick up on the tension. She shifted her gaze from her sister to her parents and back again. Valentine decided Frat had the right idea, cleared his plate, and went outside. He had played the role of a forester the past few days and brought down several likely-looking trees from the wooded hills to turn into split-rail fences and fireplace fodder. He lost himself in the chopping, thinking about how to improvise a pack for his Morgan and some spare saddles. He could tie together a sawbuck rig, and there was enough worn-out leather and canvas in the old tack trunk to strap it to his horse. By having the Morgan carry feed for itself and Gonzalez's horse, and with Valentine loaded as well, they should be able to get within striking distance of the Ozarks before the oats and corn ran out. He planned to cross the Mississippi farther north and move quickly across Iowa, returning to the Free Territory somewhere southwest of St. Louis. But despite the hard work and plans to get his crippled wolf home, thoughts of Molly continually shifted his train of thought to emotional sidings. Frat's comment brought him out of his sledge-swinging meditation.
I said you're losing it, man.
What was that?
You've been chopping wood almost every day since you got here. You're a regular Paul Bunyan. We've got enough to get us through 2 winters. It's going to rot before we can use it.
Well, maybe your dad can sell some of it.
Valentine realized his back and arms ached. He looked at the sun. The warm September afternoon had already begun. Even better, his mind was relaxed, tranquil.
Hey, David, why are they watching the house?
Valentine put down the sledge, leaning the handle against his leg. So much for tranquility.
Who's watching the house?
Frat shaded his eyes and looked up into the hills and shrugged.
The patrols. There's a car down the road toward LaGrange. One guy in it, so his partner is probably in the hills somewhere with binoculars or a spotting scope.
How do you know they're two?
They always go in pairs. Uncle Mike talks about it. They switch around the partners a lot so no one gets used to working with anyone. Keeps them honest, I guess.
You're pretty sharp, Frat.
Nah, it ain't that. It's just when it's the same thing day after day, you notice the patterns. Like you. Anytime you're worried about anything, you cut wood.
I do it for the exercise.
Frat shook his head, a triumphant grin on his face.
You sure needed a lot of exercise before meeting Uncle Mike. And when you and my mom talk about the damage to Gonzo's arm, you cut a lot then. Before you went riding with Molly, too. And that same day, after you got back and cleaned up your horse, you chopped until dinner.
Valentine sat down on the stump, staring at the youth.
Hell, do you know about the deal with your sister?
Yeah, Mom and Dad were up most of the night talking about it. And talked about packing up and asking you to lead them out of Wisconsin. My mom said that wouldn't work because Mike was having us watched. Turned out she was right. They woke Molly up early and talked about it upstairs first thing this morning.
Did they decide anything?
I don't know. Molly started crying.
Valentine concentrated on keeping his face blank.
Pratt, do me a favor. You have a few rabbit snares around, don't you?
Uh-huh. There's a warren up in one of the pastures, and there are rabbits in the hills, too.
Go up and check your traps. See if you can see where that other patroller is. Can do?
Sure. Can do.
Come and look for me in the stable if you spot him. But first of all, go in the house for a few minutes, like you were just sitting around and your parents came up with something to get you out of their hair. Now get going.
Pratt scampered off toward the house. Valentine forced himself to put away his tools for the benefit of the hidden observer. He wandered to the stable in no particular hurry. The ancient stalls, missing their doors, enclosed the horses with short lengths of rope. The rich smell of horse sweat and manure filled the warm afternoon air. 5 horses, Valentine considered. 3 belonged to the Carlsons, then his and Gonzalez's. Mrs. Carlson on 1, the girls on the 2nd, Gonzalez sharing the 3rd with Mr. Carlson, taking turns riding it. He and Frat could walk. The boy looked lean and capable. They're farm and riding horses, not pack horses.
Best keep the load under 150 pounds for travel up and down hills. Blankets and tenting, rope and equipment. Farrier supplies for the horses, or losing a shoe means losing a horse. Maybe a week's food for man and beast. Would a week get us out of reach? God, life sign. Extra reapers and Glarus to think about. They'd cover the 30 miles to LaGrange between dusk and midnight running. Shit. We'd be drawing to an inside straight. And Gonzalez can't shoot.
Hi, David. You're sweaty. Frat said you were cutting wood.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought I'd leave your dad with a good supply. Or he could sell it, help pay for all the food we ate. Don't know how to pay him back for saving our lives. You okay?
She ran her hands through uncombed hair, pulling the sun-kissed blonde strands behind her.
So you know, then.
No point in lying, he thought.
Yeah. I sort of eavesdropped last night through the basement air vent. None of my business, I know, Molly. Your uncle painted a pretty ugly picture. What'd your parents say?
They just told me to do some thinking, and we talk about it more today. But I've already made up my mind.
Not the Masada solution, I hope.
A hint of her old smile crossed her face.
No. I'm going to do it, of course.
Valentine had a feeling all morning that would be her decision. What alternative did she have? Perhaps he could offer one.
Did you tell your parents?
Not yet. I wanted to tell you first. I know that sounds dumb. I mean, it's not like you're my husband, but...
Molly, I've been thinking about getting your family out of here. And not just since yesterday, either. It's a slim chance, I admit. But here's what we gotta do.
David, don't start. It's okay.
No, listen to what I've been thinking.
No. I want you to listen to me. Your slim chance, it involves us trying to slip out, becoming runners, right?
Not just us. Everyone. Your parents, the horses, even the dog.
Listen, David, you're crazy. None of us are in shape to ride or walk for days and days. And they're still watching us. If my uncle's letting us see 2 men, that probably means there's 6 more all around somewhere. He's no doubt let the Breitlings know that if we try something stupid, they can get the 5-year bonds just for calling the patrols. They're only giving me an illusion of choice in the matter. My mom didn't say it, but I think that one side of the coin has the promise of the bond, but the other has a threat. If the bishop says frog, my uncle jumps. He's not going to let something like family get in the way of orders.
Valentine opened his mouth, but she stepped toward him and gently cupped her hand over it.
David, I'm glad you were thinking about getting us out. Before this stuff with Touchette, it would have worked, I'm sure. No one would have expected us to up and disappear. We could have done it with you guiding us. You know, almost nobody has maps anymore. None of the roads have signs. I couldn't find my way to Madison if I wanted to, or anywhere else outside of a 20-mile circle.
She pulled her hand away and hugged him. He put his arms around her, strangely unhappy at the embrace.
You're being good and brave. But let's face facts. I'm not a damsel in distress, and there are too many dragons anyway. This guy is a big shot. He's gonna get what he wants. I see a few cow farms I've never seen before, and some backwater towns. I get a trip to Madison. Maybe he just likes having a girl on his arm to impress people, who knows? So I sleep with him. One thing's for sure, I don't want a baby. My mom said there's a way...
Molly, don't say it. I don't want to think about you doing that.
What, pregnancy? Well, you're a man. I guess you don't have to think about it if you don't want to. You seem a little old not to know the facts of life.
But women have to consider the possibility.
No, I've just heard things about women dying that way, you know?
She looked down the aisle of horses and patted Lucy on the nose. Valentine looked at her, in an old pair of her father's pants cut off at the knee, breasts swelling under a t-shirt. In her disheveled state, she looked younger than her 18 years, too young to be cold-bloodedly discussing abortion.
Well, with any luck, the old fart's incapable.
She walked down the line of horses.
Great, the hay nets are empty. Mary only wants to ride and groom horses. She leaves them mucking out to Frat and me. Poor things. Sorry, guys, we can't turn you out in the new field until the fence is done. These two new horses ate up what grass you guys left in your pasture. Do me a favor, David. Can you get the two bales from the loft? I'm going to water these two.
Valentine crossed to the barn and climbed into the hayloft. He liked the sweet smell of hay and alfalfa up here, masking the cow odor from beneath. A couple of sparrows hopped and played in the air, and spiderwebs caught the sunlight like little silver flowers. He heard the ladder rungs creaking. Molly joined him in the loft, a determinedly cheerful smile showing off her good teeth. She had washed her face at the horse pump. Her t-shirt had a wet, face-shaped patch over the belly where she'd used it to dry herself.
I thought I'd give you a hand with the bales. They're really loose. Sometimes they're hard to handle, but if you bale hay tight, it gets all mildewy and rots. We can't afford to waste anything.
Valentine sniffed a bale.
Hey, you're right. I didn't know that. All the hay I've ever seen has been packed too tight. Doesn't smell as good as this.
That's the clover. We grow that on the other side of the road.
She cut a bundle and spilled it onto the floor of the loft.
Very funny. How are we going to carry it now? Or do you want to make a scarecrow?
Sure, David. We can use your clothes. Why don't you take them off and give them to me?
What's that?
She knelt in the hay.
Too shy? Okay, I'll start.
With a quick, graceful movement, she pulled her t-shirt up and over her head. Her shapely young breasts bobbed enticingly as she leaned back into the hay. Valentine stood and gaped, feeling his groin swell, otherwise utterly dumbfounded.
David, do I have to spell it out for you? Let's make love. I need you to do this for me.
Molly, I mean, we've never even kissed. This is kind of...
sudden? Well, yes, I suppose you're right. Actually, I've only kissed a couple of guys, and one, he was in the patrols. I didn't even want him to kiss me, but he did, and he put his hand on my chest. I yelled, pushed him away, and ran for it. That's the sum total of my sexual experience. David, I'm a virgin. I'm going to be with this guy, and the thing that bothers me the most about it, well, other than that I'm being forced to do it in the first place, the thing that bothers me the most is that he'd be my first time. Not a memory I want to have for the rest of my life. I know you. I like you a lot, and I think you like me. You're nice. You're better looking than some and brighter than most. You're an officer. A gentleman, too, otherwise you'd already be on top of me.
It's not like the thought hasn't crossed my mind, Molly.
Just go slow, okay, David?
She scooted her hips up off the floor of the loft and slipped the oversized shorts down to her feet. She kicked them off with the flick of a leg. Valentine sank to his knees beside her, placing his mouth on hers. He was also inexperienced. His innate shyness and quiet manner made even youthful kisses and pettings few and far between. Molly Carlson, perhaps the most beautiful girl he had ever known, was in his arms and his for the taking. Animal instinct came to his rescue. His young, demanding lust took him where his self-confidence feared to tread. He felt her probing hand reach the hardness in his pants. She fumbled with his belt. He wanted to take off his shirt, but her soft, yielding mouth felt so exquisite against his, it was impossible to break contact. She undid his belt, and the worn-out stitching of the fly gave way to her hearty pull. Skittering buttons flew in all directions. He managed to tear his mouth away from hers, laying a series of gentle kisses across her face and down her neck. She squirmed, thrusting her breasts against his chest. He pulled his shirt up and off his head and thrashed out of his pants. Molly came up to his mouth, pressing him with a hard kiss that went all the way down to his soul, and he lost balance.
Oh, whoa.
Falling onto his back with her on top of him. Coppery blonde hair tickled his face and neck like tiny dancing fingers as she kissed him. Her hand trailed down across his stomach and found him, first touching, then exploring, and finally gripping his hardness. His own arms traced the muscles on her back and caressed the soft skin of her buttocks. Molly rubbed herself against his thigh, one of her hands playing with his black hair as the other stroked him below.
God, Molly, that's good.
Valentine returned the favor, his gentle hand tracing the outlines of her sex from the curly triangular mat of pubic hair to the soft folds of flesh between her legs. Their kisses became a rapid staccato, and he felt a rush of moisture come to her.
Please, David. Slowly, okay?
Molly turned over on her back, and he followed her movement as if in time to a waltz. She gazed up at him, pupils dilated in the dimness of the loft. He suddenly wanted this moment to be forever. Molly in his arms and the smell of womanhood and clover and a hint of lavender sweetness in his nostrils. He pressed himself against her, kissing her softly and slowly as she guided him inside.
Oh.
Oh.
And they were one. He took her in a series of slow strokes, each one slightly deeper than the last. A wince of pain washed across her face and then turned as an ebb tide gives way to the flow into a flush of passion. Molly's hands alternately clawed and caressed his rippling back with each deep, slow penetration. They lost themselves, together and yet apart, until at last he climaxed. Emptying himself into her, a spasm after spasm racked his body, mouth gaping open as if in a scream, but producing only an intense, unintelligible moan. Afterward, she lay in his arms, drowsing away the afternoon. He teetered on the pleasant point between exhilaration and exhaustion.
You okay?
Wonderful.
Molly reached between her legs and brought up her fingers. A smear of blood coated her forefinger and thumb.
Funny, I figured it would be gone after all the horse riding.
Valentine kissed away the blood from her hand. The girl named Molly, who walked into the barn that afternoon, would have been disgusted at the gesture, but the woman in her lover's arms thought it touching.
Ha, fooled you, my time of the month.
He glanced up at her, eyebrows lifted.
Joke!
She twitched her nose at him and rolled her eyes.
Well, since this chore is done, I really have to look into making a pack for my horse.
Molly restrained him, tightening her grip around his neck.
Ah, chore indeed! When I took off my shirt, you about passed out.
Yeah, the blood drained out of my head, all right.
I know where it all went. I'm going to be walking funny for a while, I think.
They kissed, laughing into each other's mouths.
Seriously, now, David, this whole thing actually helps you, too. If you and Gonzo pack up and go right after I do, it will fit perfectly. I'm sure they're expecting you to get pissed and leave. You can keep the story about looking for a place to farm west of here. Your work cards are legit. Even if they call Monroe to check it out, your story will stand up.
He rolled onto his back in the hay with a sigh. He did not want the afternoon to end.
When are you going to Monroe?
Tomorrow afternoon. Touchette is leaving for Richland Center the day after tomorrow. Tuesday morning, I guess. That's what Uncle Mike told my dad on the phone today. Is this guy that important that they kidnap young ex-virgins for him?
Valentine shrugged.
You'd know better than I. But if he gets production out of the farms, I suppose he's pretty important. Their army has to eat, too. Speaking of eating, I wonder if Frat found any rabbits. Your mother makes a great game pie. Oh, God, your parents. I'm going to have a hard time acting normal in front of them.
Oh, you and me both. But what do we have to feel guilty about? You're my fiancé, right?
He nuzzled her with his chin. The shyness had magically vanished. Or perhaps it had been exorcised by a far stronger and more ancient magic.
Molly Valentine. Ooh.
Hey!
No, I just hate the Molly part. I love Valentine. Melissa Valentine? That's better. Nobody ever called me Melissa. Molly! It was way easier to shout.
Valentine looked out at the setting sun.
Oh, put your pants on, Melissa, or we'll be here all night.
That wouldn't be so bad. I wonder if the patrolman watching the place got an eyeful.
Dinner passed self-consciously, but Valentine found he could talk to her parents without feeling too uncomfortable. Her parents seemed to have other things on their minds. All Valentine could do was look at Molly's red, raw lips. How could they not notice that? Gonzalez noticed something else in the basement as they got ready for bed.
Val, what happened today?
Split a lot of wood?
You stuck your wedge into something.
Valentine turned around.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, your fly's been on button all night, and your back looked like two alley cats went about 15 rounds on it. Unless you've been rolling in a barbed wire, I'd say someone was moaning in your ear.
Just go to sleep, funny man. I was just doing some chores for the family, really. Molly had something she needed fixed, so I took care of it for her.
Gonzalez shook his head and turned over, carefully positioning his injured arm.
Yeah, you officers get all the good jobs.
Valentine awoke in the middle of the night to a light tread on the stair. In the dim light shining down from the kitchen, he saw Molly cautiously entering the basement.
David?
Over here.
No, over here.
Shut up, you.
I wanted to talk to you. Sorry, Gonzo.
Gonzalez swung his feet to the floor and pulled on his pants with his good arm.
I just remembered how long it's been since I watched a sunrise. Don't make too much noise talking, you two.
Thanks, Victor. I mean it.
You owe me one. See you at breakfast.
He moved soundlessly up the stairs. Molly scuttled into Valentine's arms. He kissed her, grateful for her surprise.
Did you want to talk?
Sort of, but not anymore. Let's go into the secret room. It's dark and we can make a little bit of noise, but just a little.
Valentine opened the panel in the wall and they nipped into the deep shadows, holding hands.
Hey, you used one of those soaps.
Yes, this one's...
Roses.
Valentine caressed her hair.
Beautiful.
She shut the door, and they were in blackness so total there was nothing but touch and the faint smell of roses. They kissed, and kissing, lay down together. They melded in the darkness, learning new ways to please each other, delight each other, and finally, love each other. They said goodbyes in a steady, spirit-sapping drizzle. As Flanagan and his ubiquitous shadow waited out of the rain in the patrol car, family, friends, and lovers shared a few parting hugs. Valentine, Molly, and her parents all wore the same air of false cheerfulness that appears at a funeral after a septuagenarian drops dead in perfect health. Never knew what hit him, one relative will say to another. Yes, I'd love to go that way. No pain, no suffering, no illness. Lucky man, the other will agree, jointly looking for the tiny patch of sunshine among the dreary clouds. That morning, Molly had put on her oldest cow-mucking work clothes, clean but nevertheless permanently stained.
Country girl he wants, country girl he gets.
She turned down her mother's suggestion that she wear her prettiest dress, a blue checkered barn dancer that matched her eyes, to cheer herself up.
No, give that to Mary. Something to remember me by.
What do you mean by that, dear? You make it sound like she'll never see...
Take care of that arm, Victor.
Molly shook Gonzo's left hand, and then turned to Frat.
My turn to see the big city, Frat. At least Madison isn't Chicago, thank God. Mary, there's more to horses than riding and brushing them. I'm putting you in charge of the stables while I'm gone, and you'd better keep it clean.
Her words to Valentine, in hindsight, also hinted at her dark mood under the steel-gray clouds.
David, you're going tonight, right? When it gets dark?
That's the plan. I'm still working on that pack for my horse. We'll be miles away by morning.
She smiled up at him, satisfied. They wandered to the side of the house where they could kiss without watchful eyes on them.
I'll think of you fighting reapers, David. You know... Now that I've thought of it, maybe your Masada solution is the better one. Take a few of them with you.
Molly, don't get so grim. You'll look back on this in a couple of years and laugh. Or maybe throw up, but it's not forever. It's really kind of pathetic of him if you think about it. Sending your butt-kissing uncle out into the woods to bring him a dinner date at gunpoint.
That's the first thing I'll tell him.
Come back and work the farm. And just because my plan won't work right now doesn't mean it won't 3 years from now. Some night a team of wolves will show up at your back door. We'll get your whole family out.
If my dad will go. He's pretty committed to smuggling people out of here.
Well, I owe your family a very big favor. You're going to collect on it. I'll come for you someday in the fall, if I can.
She looked into his eyes.
I think 3 years from now, you'll have more important things to worry about. Be careful about promises. You know that saying, tomorrow is promised to no one, right? That's like the law of the Kurian lands.
You've got 5 years promised to you and your family.
We'll see, David. That bond might be as worthless as the ring he tossed into the audience. Just go tonight, okay? But can you tell me one thing, David? Was I your first time, you know, lovemaking?
Valentine owed her the truth.
Yes. I hope you liked it. I've never been very lucky with women.
Good. You'll remember me then.
Valentine gave her nose a gentle tweak.
I'll remember you as the Wisconsin beauty who was really good at pointing out the obvious.
They embraced, kissed, and touched each other's faces as if trying to record memories with their fingertips.
Believe it or not, I'll come for you. It's a promise, Molly.
He read hurt disbelief in her eyes.
No, not a promise. A vow.
Now only the hurt remained. Molly looked away from him.
Don't. A lot can happen in 3 years.
A lot can happen in 3 days. Like falling in love, Melissa.
David, stop. You're just making this harder, making it painful. This is an end. I don't want you to talk like it's a beginning.
He kissed her, trying to win a concession through sheer sensual power.
No, I can't. Not when I have to go. Like this.
Vampire Earth is continued on the next CD.
At dinner that night, Valentine and Gonzalez decided to leave with the first light of dawn. They had a final farewell talk with the Carlsons before turning in for the night. A morning departure with a quick goodbye to the Breitlings would seem less suspicious than a midnight escape. Frat seemed fast asleep in his cot, and Gonzalez and Valentine lay in the basement, their guns and packs stored for the last night in the secret room. Gonzalez hid his anxiety about his injured arm well, but Valentine knew the worry dragged at his scout. Gonzalez worked best when the only thing worrying him was what might be around the next bend or over the next hill, so Valentine talked frankly about how they would accommodate his injury on the trip home. The rest of the household had long since retired, and they burned only a foul-smelling tallow dip for light.
You'll ride. I wish we could hang around longer, but it might be months before your arm is totally healed.
Valentine rolled his maps back up into their tube.
You think it will get better?
Of course, Gonzo. Nerve tissue just takes forever to heal.
Gonzalez moved two painful fingers.
I don't know about that. Might never grow back.
Well, you can move your hand a little. I think that's a good sign. In fact, hey, an engine.
Both wolves used their hard ears. It sounded like a truck engine. Perhaps one of the semi-drivers was passing through with another foundling. But it stopped in the road, idling with thick coughs of exhaust. Valentine and Gonzalez exchanged looks. Without another word, they got up and moved to the secret door. They carried the tallow lamp behind the false wall with them and shut the panel behind. They ignored their packs, grabbing knives and guns. A crash sounded from above through the air vent, the house-shaking sound of a door being kicked in. A whisper came from the other side of the secret door.
Guys, are you in there?
No.
Shouts from upstairs, a man's voice issuing orders to search the house.
Yes.
Two men in a big van and two more in a patrol car. They're all armed and coming in. Gotta go.
Valentine finished tying his Parang sheath on his leg and picked up his rifle.
Hey, kid! Get up out of that bed and get up here!
I'm coming. Don't point that shotgun at me, okay?
Gonzalez blew out the tallow dip in case the smell was wafting up to the living room. They heard Mr. Carlson as he descended the stairs from the second story into the living room.
What in the heck is all this, Tolan?
Orders. You're wanted for questioning.
Orders? We'll see what Major Flanagan has to say about that.
He gave the orders, Pod. You know, I think your days of being under his wing are over. Your little girl stuck a steak knife into Mr. Brass Ring's neck.
Oh, my God!
A couple of hours ago, your brother's fucked, and he knows it, and he thinks the only way out of the jam is to arrest everyone here.
Can I at least tell my hired help to take care of things while I'm gone?
The Breitlings? We're supposed to arrest them, too. Where's those two from up north, the guy who was seeing your daughter? The Major wants him brought personal to his office.
They left after dinner. David was pissed about the whole thing with Molly.
Shut up, Sambo. If I want your opinion, I'll slap it out of you. Carlson, is he right?
Yes. You searched the house, didn't you?
Which way did they go and when?
After dinner. They didn't even eat with us. I think they went north, but I don't know. I had other things on my mind today than watching them leave. You should leave us alone and go after them. They probably put her up to it.
A rattling came from above.
I got them leg irons, Sarge. Should we link them up now?
Yeah. Pillow, go out to the car, radio that we got the Carlsons in custody. Also put out a general call to pick up two men on horseback. One's got a bum hand. You other two, get busy with those shackles.
Valentine touched Gonzalez on the shoulder in the darkness, and they felt for the door. They cut across the shadowed basement, listening to the rattle of chains as the patrollers fixed the family into the leg irons. Valentine led the way up the basement steps, keeping to the edges to lessen the sound of boards creaking. They padded through the kitchen barefoot, Valentine with his repeater to his shoulder and Gonzalez with his held against his hip. Valentine paused for just a second to listen at the corner between the kitchen and the front living room, attempting to place the occupants by sound. All he could hear was a frightened crying from young Mary Carlson and the sounds of shackles being clicked closed and chains passed through steel eyes. He gestured to Gonzalez, who moved to the kitchen door of the house. With a quick sidestep, Valentine rounded the corner, gun tight to his shoulder, a shotgun-wielding man already in his sights.
Nobody move. You with the shotgun, put it on the floor, holding it by the barrel. You two with the chains, face down on the floor.
As he spoke, Gonzalez opened the back door, holding the rifle in his armpit, and disappeared into the darkness. The patrollers, conditioned by years of practice in using their guns to bully unarmed farmers and townspeople, complied with alacrity. The Carlsons, dressed in their bedclothes, kicked the weapons away from the uniformed quislings.
Okay, you with the stripes, face down too. Good. Spread eagle, gentlemen. I got 8 shots in this repeater. The man who moves gets the first one. Frat, get the guns away from them before they get any ideas.
Frat began collecting pistols and shotguns.
Guess who cut it, Carlson?
Tolan spoke into the floor.
Before, you were just wanted for questioning. This means you're all dead within a day or two. It's not an easy death either if the Reapers...
A pistol thrust into the sergeant's mouth cut off the imprecations.
Shut up, Sarge. When I want any of your lip, I'll blow it off.
Mr. and Mrs. Carlson, start putting the shackles on them. Hands and feet, please.
The screen door swung open, and the fourth patroller entered, his fingers laced behind his head, and the muzzle of Gonzalez's gun pressing him behind the ear.
Pilo here just reported the situation as being under control. Is it, sir?
Seems to be. Where are the Breitlings?
They hadn't gotten around to them yet. They're probably still asleep.
Mrs. Carlson, after you're finished, do you think you could go get them?
Could I get some more clothes on first?
Of course.
The patrollers were now securely shackled and handcuffed. They're scared, Valentine thought, looking at the sweat stains on the blue uniforms. He was also pretty sure that the one named Pillow had pissed himself. Scared people confuse easily.
Boy, that Major's fucking things up, Carlson.
Valentine winked at his benefactor.
Hey, Sarge, you know what you've stumbled into?
You're a corpse, boy. You're a corpse that happens to be walking and talking for a few more hours.
Valentine thrust his rifle butt under Tolan's nose.
Don't think so, Sarge. Look at this. You've just busted in on a Twisted Cross double-secret blind operation.
What the fuck is a Twisted Cross double-secret bullshit?
You wouldn't know, would you? We wanted Touchette dead, but we couldn't get him in Illinois because he bought off so many of the people around him. But why am I telling you this? He was trying to spy out the operation of Blue Mounds.
Bullshit! Banging the Carlson girl ain't gonna accomplish that, nor giving speeches neither.
Sarge, you don't have to believe me, but let me give you 2 facts. One is that you're still alive, and the other is that all this is way over your head. Something's gone wrong with our operation, or you wouldn't have gotten those orders to bring these folks in. I suggest in the future you have Madison confirm everything before doing what Major Flanagan says. Gonzalez?
Yes, sir.
We're switching to Plan Red Charlie.
You're in charge, sir.
Valentine hoped the patrollers would interpret Gonzalez's confusion for reluctance.
Let's go outside and discuss it. Mr. Carlson, Frat, keep an eye on these four.
In the cool night air, Valentine patted Gonzalez on the back.
Good job with Pillow, Gonzo. You still haven't lost your touch, injury or no.
Sir, what's our next move? Are we going to leave now?
Valentine nodded and walked down the road toward the vehicles. A dirt-covered patrol car and a delivery van-type truck stood in the blackness. The clouds had still not dispersed.
Gonzo, I'm going to have to give you a lot of responsibility. Maybe it'll take your mind off the pain in your arm. I want to get the Carlsons and the Breitlings out of Wisconsin, all the way to Ozark Free Territory.
We can do it.
Maybe we could. But Gonzo, it's not going to be a we. It's going to be a you. I'm going after Molly.
Gonzo's eyes bulged with surprise.
Hey, friend. She's probably dead already.
If she is, she's going to have some company. That asshole of an uncle, for one.
What is more important? Getting you and me and these people back safely, telling about what we saw behind all those skulls, or killing one Quisling? I hate to tell you your duty, but...
Fuck my duty.
Just the words themselves could subject him to a court-martial and firing squad.
I've had too many people I care about die. Not this one. Not this girl.
I've already forgotten what you just said, sir. But you will still have to explain this if you get back. What am I supposed to do with these civilians? The prisoners? I'd have a tough time making it back to the Ozarks, just me and my horse, let alone all these people.
Here's the plan.
Gonzalez listened as his lieutenant gave his final orders. An hour later, everything was ready. The patrollers were locked in the feed shed, still shackled. The feed shed had the best lock and was the only all-cinder block construction on the farm. The delivery van waited, with its ramp brought up and rear lift gate closed. Horses were saddled and tied to the rear bumper. Inside the spacious interior, empty except for numerous eye bolts for fixing prisoners in position, were the Breitlings, Mrs. Carlson, and Mary Carlson, clutching a few blankets and some travel clothing, along with the family dog. Mr. Carlson was at the wheel, and Gonzalez rode shotgun. Both were dressed in blue patroller uniforms taken from the Quisling captives. Valentine and Frat stood outside the passenger door. Valentine wore the best of the uniforms and carried the identity papers of the patroller who most resembled him, the pants-wetting Pillow. Gonzalez rolled Valentine's map back up and returned it to the tube.
We meet south of the bridge outside Bentham. Okay, Frat?
Frat nodded.
Mr. Carlson, if I can't get your daughter, I'm going to leave one hell of a trail of dead Quislings. They'll come after me with everything they've got. Should make it a little easier for you.
No one's asking you to do this, son. Molly's probably already dead. Maybe she used the knife on herself after killing Touchette.
Carlson's lips trembled as he spoke.
I don't think she'd give up that easily, Alan. If she's alive, I'm going to get her back. I'm coming back with your daughter. Or not at all.
He turned to Gonzalez and shook his friend's good hand.
Gonzo, I know you can do this. You got the brains and the skills. Just keep them moving. Eat the horses one by one if it helps. When you get back, tell them everything you remember, even if it doesn't seem important. They've also got to get a cat or two up here to find out what's going on at Blue Mounds. One other thing. Get Frat into the hunters. Or at least have him posted as an aspirant. He'll make a better wolf than either of us, at least someday. Take every buckshot I've got and draw it to get the Carlson started. I got some friends in a little place called Weaning.
Valentine racked his mind, searching for another suggestion to increase Gonzalez's chances. There was always one more order to give, one more contingency to consider.
I will do it, all of it, sir. Vaya con Dios, jefe. And I'll be praying for you, sir, every day.
Back to praying, Gonzalez? I thought your mother was in charge of that.
She's in charge of my soul. I'll take care of yours.
You're gonna have plenty to take care of in the next couple weeks without my soul thrown in. But thank you anyway. I'm honored.
Carlson started up the truck, and Valentine hopped to the ground. Gonzalez gave a little salute from his perch.
Good luck, Lieutenant.
Send my respect to the Zulus, Gonzo.
The truck rolled off into the darkened west. Hours to go before daylight.
Okay, Frat. You and me now. Wish I had learned how to drive better.
Frat moved around to the driver's side.
It's okay, Lieutenant. I know the way, so it's just as well.
You can call me David, bud. Drive slow and careful. Keep the headlights off.
I know. You told me. Where to?
Valentine checked the contents of his pack and a spare feed bag, which held extra restraints and a few packets from the Carlson's kitchen.
Your uncle's house. You can tell me everything you remember about it on the way.
Pratt covered the 20 miles in just over an hour, switching to tractor trails and cattle paths as he drew close to Monroe. The roads were empty, and the night seemed to be waiting for the curtain to go up on the last act of the play. The radio squawked occasionally, reporting from the patrols looking for two men on horseback. Valentine mentally prepared himself for a tragic ending to the drama. As Frat drove, leaning far forward as if the extra foot and a half of viewing distance made a difference, Valentine applied a hacksaw to the double-barreled shotgun, taking off the barrels from the edge of the wooden grip onward. He then filled the pockets on its leather sling bandolier with buckshot shells. A second pump-action shotgun lay on the wooden back seat of the car.
Okay, we're in the fields behind his house. It's right beyond that line of trees there. We stayed over here a few times, back when he had a wife.
Whatever happened to her?
Don't know. Nobody does. One day she was just gone, and we learned not to ask.
So he's not much for answering questions, then.
Valentine stepped out of the car and took the pump-action shotgun, pocketing shells into his stolen uniform.
I'll try to change that. Keep the scatter gun handy, Frat. Don't be afraid to use it. Pull out if something comes after you. Keep alert.
I will, sir. You be careful.
Valentine walked silently up to the line of trees, listening and smelling for the guard dogs. Their scent seemed to be everywhere across the lawn. Perhaps they were around front. The extravagant house had bright security lights mounted high up just under the roof, angled out to bathe the lawn in white light. Their brilliance threw the surrounding terrain into harsh black and white relief, blazing white wherever the lights touched and utter black in the shadows.